before we start, otherwise it caused some confusion, not so good. Because last Tuesday class, Sister Lee was at my house. Then there was this condition, and I think I knew she need those books, because suddenly I flicked through my old record. These were the talks I gave in 2005, about 7 over years ago. Then they actually, the Kayanamitas at that time, they liked it so much, they did the transcript. I edited it. Then we went through the proofreading. So finally, it was done up. So during that time, I think it benefited many people. But then I kept this for very long. I didn't have a chance to actually give it to somebody. Then that night, somehow I was going through the thing that I saw, then I took it out and I say, I want to pass it to them to have a look. Then they say, they want. Then I say, okay, if not that, maybe I send it for photostat. So I photostated 20 sets. Actually, I got some copies. But if it's too early, not much use. Because during the very early days, I gave to Mi Feng. But she cannot understand at that time, because the five agree everything, not until they went to Fraser's Hill. So I was thinking, no point, otherwise you find the book so boring. Then when you don't understand, it defeats the purpose and intention. Then it makes you like, you don't have the very strong determination to understand the Dhamma. So wait till the time come. When there is a need, I will know. Then that time when you receive it, you really treasure it, understand not? And you really benefit from it. Because the moment there is condition, all this become like gem. But if it's not the time yet, even if you give to the beggar a gem, he think it's a stone. He say, what for? I want food, I want money, you give me a stone. Then he throw away. But it's actually a gem, understand or not? But before you understand, there is not much use for you, because you don't know how to polish that gem, understand? You don't know how to make use of it. Then it doesn't seem to have value to you, because you cannot eat it, but it can actually help you a lot. So that's why there were certain conditions behind. Then somehow I told them, okay, we will use the Kayanamita fund to print it. So you all should rejoice. Even though you all didn't do anything, but as part and parcel of the Kayanamita community, and you have donated in one way or another, you have actually partake in this wholesomeness. And this will benefit many, many people. Because when I first came out to share, I thought that was the Dhamma the living being did need. So when I share, I realize hardly people understand. Those who at that time can understand 10% of what I said, already very good. So later on I came to realize it is not the Dhamma. They need the basic. So that's why I reverse back the whole thing. I need to start all over again the basic Dhamma. Starting with, of course, the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Four Noble Truths, then the Three Evil Roots, the Five Spiritual Faculty, the Five Hindrances. Then from there, we have to go back to what the Buddha really taught, the very basic teaching, how to cultivate the mind, train the mind, to develop the heedfulness, the awareness. Then from there, understand what is going on. And then only we talk about the real meditation later on. So when you have this base already established, then you can appreciate the Dhamma. Otherwise, very difficult. It's like in the kindergarten, the kid come, you have to teach them A, B, C there. Then after that, you have to teach them how to sing there. Then how to form words, isn't it? Then make sentences, isn't it? So if ABC also not there, words also don't know how to form, sentences also don't know how to make, how can you give them book to read? You have to have this basic developed. And then after that, when you teach them how to sing, then when they receive the book, it becomes very meaningful. So that is what we hope you can understand and realize the importance of awaiting for the appropriate condition and timing to receive certain things. It will come, you don't worry. Like now, Sui is here, I can give her one set because she is quite serious. You can pass to her. Then, Andrian, I reserve one for you already. You don't worry. When you are ready, you anytime can come. Then I will give it to you. Okay, today I think we are quite lucky. Because a lot of people went back for Cheng Beng. So many, I think, told me they cannot make it today. But I say it's okay because some of them has gone back earlier, 1 week earlier. Like Sui An, Sister Lee, they have their Cheng Beng earlier. If you ask me, I have not gone back for a long time. Because for me, it's like that. I actually didn't go back for Cheng Beng. I do it at my house. But the day 2004 that year, when my father passed away, that year onward, I went back for 3 years just to teach my brothers and sisters how to do it, how to develop the understanding of what Cheng Beng is, following the Buddha Dharma, following the understanding of the teaching, not to just blindly do what people do. So when you understand the significance of it, you will know how to do. Then I said, you can do from your house. Filial piety is from your heart, not what you do externally. But it's useful for people who need that, especially my mother. He still want to see tangible things. That's why I went back 3 years to teach my brothers and sisters how to do it, so that my mother is happy, everybody is happy. Because this older generation people, they got this love and what they call, in a way, is their belief that every Cheng Beng, they must before that clean up the graveyard. Because now not only my grandparents' graveyard are there, my father one is also there. Then my mother also have a space reserved for her, because together with my father, they want to be together. So since 2004, it's already almost 8 years. So my mother is very passionate about that. He wants that place clean, and he wants to see that the children, the grandchildren really come and pay respect, offer, and have filial piety. So I said, to make her happy, to let her understand, you should do. And you do with understanding and you rejoice. It's also very meaningful. And it's okay, no problem. The more important is from your heart. If your heart has filial piety, you can do from anywhere. You don't have to be physically there. But if it can make a difference to somebody, like my mother or what, then should go and do. And certain of this tradition, if it's understood, you pass down, is very good. If it's not understood, it becomes rites and ritual, superstition. Then it defeats the purpose. Okay? So this is just a simple but very important sharing of what Cheng Beng is. Okay, we better start, otherwise we'll be late. Okay, can sisters in the pre-puja? We have the Theravada tradition, then followed by our... the Mahayana tradition, followed by our Theravada tradition. Okay.
Thank you, Brother Teo. We start chanting Namo Bunsi Sijia Moni Phuo 3 times and Namo Kwansi Im Pusa, followed by Po Ye Po Lo Mi Duan Sin Jing. Bow 3 times, sincerely. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Bo. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Bo. Namo Bensi Sijia Moni Bo. Namo Guansiyin Pusa. Namo Guansiyin Pusa. Namo Guansiyin Pusa. Po Ye Po Lo Mi Do Sin Jing.观自在菩萨行深般若波罗蜜多时，照见无闻解空度一切苦厄，舍利子舍不异，空空不异，舍色即是空，空即是色，受想行识皆不如是。舍利子是诸法空相，不生不灭，不垢不净，不增不减，是故空中无色，无受想行识，无眼耳鼻舌身意，无色声香味触法，无眼界乃至无意之界，无无明意，无无明镜，乃至无老死意，无老死境，无苦集灭道，无智意，无得意，无所得故，菩提萨多依般苦婆罗蜜多故，心无挂碍，无挂碍故，无有恐怖，远离颠倒梦想，究竟涅槃，三世诸佛依般苦婆罗蜜多故，得阿耨多罗三藐三菩提，故知般苦婆罗蜜多是大神咒，是大明咒，是无上咒，是无等等咒，能除一切苦，证实不虚，故说般苦婆罗蜜多咒即所咒也。揭谛揭谛婆罗揭谛婆罗僧揭谛菩提萨婆诃。
萨德萨德萨德。Okay, thank you so much, Sister Lee. We will now start the Theravada tradition puja. We will chant the salutation to the Buddha.Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa.Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmiTutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmiPānāti pātā vairamani sikāpadāṃ samādhiyāmi Ādhinādhāna vairamani sikāpadāṃ samādhiyāmi Kāmesu micācara vairamani sikāpadāṃ samādhiyāmiMusāvādā vairamani sikāpadāṃ samādhiyāmi Surāmerāyā majjhapamādattānā vairamani sikāpadāṃ samādhiyāmi Sādhu, sādhuSadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the worthy ones. Sister Lee, did you photostat the notes, the short notes? You can lend me a copy. The short note, the last previous one. Yeah. Okay. Very good afternoon to all. Huh? We'll start the Heart Sutta. Huh? This week is going to be quite unique, huh? Because today is the actual day you really start the Heart Sutta, huh? Proper. Because the previous few 6 or 7 sessions is all on introduction to prepare you, huh? To receive this sutta. So we have finished all the introduction. Huh? Then today, what I will do is, I will go through it quickly, huh? On the recap, so that we can all move faster. Okay, you turn to the notes, huh? Short note. 6 Heart Sutta from meditation class held at Wu Ping Jingse, 18th of March, 3 to 6. Last Sunday, we have to cancel the class because Sister Lee, they all went up to Penang. I think it's your master's anniversary or whatever. Okay, a recap of the Dhamma discussed via short notes can help enhance understanding. This is very important. And this short notes taken is to assist in developing a clearer and better understanding of the sutta discussed. So what we have actually put down here are some of the pointers or expression of the Dhamma, the important aspect that we have discussed, and also which Sister Lee has managed to take down. So I just expand on it. Then you have it here. But I will skip the Angulimala Sutta. Just give me a minute. Hello. Sorry about it. Okay. The Heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta with verse without a stand and prose commentary consists of 3 parts. So this one is just a repeat of what we actually went through. You can go through it quickly. The sutra text itself, the Venerable Master Swenhoa's verse explanation, and the Master's lectured commentaries on the text and verse. So these are the 3 parts that Master Swenhoa has actually break down this so-called the Heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta, the write-up. So these 3 parts are very important. The first part is the sutra itself, which we will go through afterwards. Then Master Swenhoa, he used his own explanation of the verse to give you the understanding. That's why it's called the commentaries. Then the last one is his lectured commentary on the text and the verse. So he explained the verse, then he used what they call the commentary that he has actually lectured on. The lecture commentary on the text and the verse. So the sutta is an essential summary of the Mahayana Buddhism's teaching on true emptiness. This part you have to understand. It is a essential summary of the true Mahayana Buddhism's teaching on true emptiness or sunyata. The Heart Sutta is nothing less than a summation of the wisdom of the Buddha. See? This is so important. That's why it's also called the Prajnaparamita Sutta. Prajna is wisdom. Paramita is perfection. So it's the perfection of wisdom sutta. That's why it's also summation of the wisdom of the Buddha. It distills perfectly the teaching of non-attachment. See? Ultimately, it's the wisdom that allow you to develop the understanding of what this 5 aggregate of form and mind is. When you realize they are all empty, you will not be deluded by it. Means you will not cling, hold, and attach to it. So that's why the teaching of non-attachment, it is still perfectly the teaching of non-attachment, which is the doctrine of emptiness or sunyata. As the Venerable Master Hua said in his commentary, only the most advanced of masters can expect to grasp the full import of the sutta by itself without the aid of a teacher, because this teaching is the heart in the heart within the heart. So it's a very profound sutta and not easy for people to understand and even share. That's why he said it's not easy. Then here, this is the part that I mentioned at that particular sharing. I say, according to Brother Teo, Dhamma must be delivered from the heart spontaneously and not through any prior planning via memory. Otherwise, it's only knowledge and no wisdom. Then there is a note. I think in the text, you will see this word M full stop, A full stop, as stated in the text. It stands for Masters of Arts, because it's a university, Dhammarayam University. Then the important criteria for translating the heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta as adopted by Master Xuan Hua are the eight guidelines of his Buddhist Text Translation Society. The short form is BTTS, Buddhist Text Translation Society. So their eight guidelines are very stringent and it's very good. First, a volunteer must free himself or herself from the motive of personal fame and profit. Then the volunteer must cultivate a respectful and sincere attitude, free from arrogance and conceit. You know what conceit is, your very proud nature, arrogant. A volunteer must also refrain from aggrandizing his or her work and denigrating that of others. So normally, certain author or translator, they like to glorify their own teacher or their own understanding. Then they denigrate that of others. So this is something you should not do. You should be sincere. If they are good, you should praise them and you should honor them. Your own weakness, you should be sincere about it and tell people, like what Xuan Hua said. Then a volunteer must not establish himself or herself as the standard of correctness and suppress the work of others with his or her fault finding. This is also very important. Then a volunteer must take the Buddha mind as his or her own mind. This is not easy. You must cultivate, so to say. Then a volunteer must use the wisdom of Dhamma selecting vision to determine true principle. This one also demands cultivation. Then a volunteer must request virtuous elders in the 10 directions to certify his or her translation. This one is for those who know how to tap on the affinity, the understanding, and the wisdom of the virtuous elders, means the enlightened ones, the very virtuous, and those elders, means long time cultivator, like the great bodhisattvas, the Buddhas, and all those things. Like in Cantonese, you see all these martial arts, 长辈, they call, 长辈, elders, but they are very virtuous, not the normal elders, virtuous elders, in the 10 directions. So sometimes you can make aspiration for them to help you, to guide you, and all those things. It's just like how you make aspiration for causes and conditions to avoid the fools. Meet up with the enlightened ones, the wise and enlightened ones, so that enlightenment in the here and the now, Nibbana, can be realized as soon as possible. So this one, when it comes to translation, you also can aspire, request them to help you to certify your translation. Then a volunteer must endeavor to propagate the teaching by printing the sutta or the Shastriya text and Vinaya text when the translation are certified as being correct. Means when there is condition to share the translated Dhamma, one must share, thus allowing the translation to benefit more living beings. Okay, then we come to part two. Part two is on meditation. It so happened there was a question by Sister Lee. So she asked about, I don't know how I come to this Angulimala Sutta. I think related somewhere. So somehow we end up using this Angulimala Sutta, which is very, very important and very relevant. You just imagine a person like Angulimala who has killed 999, but the moment he changed, he has the condition to become an Arahant. And it is not only this life, also because of his past affinity with the Buddha. Then when the Buddha surveyed the world that morning, out of love and compassion, he saw there is such great condition. That's why he approached using his super normal ability, Abhinya. That Angulimala has the condition. You read through, it's a very long sutta, but it's very good. You should read yourself. This one is taken from the internet. Then we turn to page 4. You see how he actually, Angulimala, how he repent, and how when he understands the importance of the Buddha Dharma, he take refuge. And from then onward, he never turn back. And he's still able to become an Arahant. But he has to patiently endure the retribution of his action earlier on. That's why when he first became a bhikkhu, he suffered a lot because of what he has done. But then he turned around when he saved the pregnant lady. You read about it. Everything is there. Okay, then we go to the bottom, second last paragraph of page 4. Question 1. While sitting in half lotus for some time, the pain of the leg become unbearable, and then when I start to chant, the original pain cease, but a more severe pain arises in another part of the leg. Why? So this was the question I think Sister Lee asked, which is very good and very appropriate. Then I answered, this one is, I don't know what I said in the tape, but this is what I reply. You can listen to the tape and compare. I think the gist is there. Maybe in the tape I elaborated more, because this was sent to me later and I didn't have a chance to listen to the tape. I just answer based on what I can recall. First, you must understand what is meditation, because that is key. Every time when you do something, you must know what is it that you are doing. Do not blindly follow instruction and do things without understanding. That is very dangerous. So the answer is very simple. First, you must understand what is meditation. And what are you doing in the name of meditation? Your purpose and intent. If you don't have such understanding, then there is this tendency to react to unpleasant feeling and sensation that arise during meditation by labeling it as pain, which is an aversion or ill will. And as we all know, ill will is one of the five hindrances of mind that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of peace and calm. As such, you are already caught or trapped by it. This is a very common mistake, because most of the meditators, they don't understand the purpose and intent of meditation, because they don't find out, they don't inquire why do they come to develop this training of the mind to meditate, and what is the purpose and its intent. So if you have this understanding and inquiry, you will not have such a problem. But most people don't. They just come, they follow instruction. Then when they confront some bad or not so good meditative experience, like pain, numbness, or itchiness, or whatever, sleepiness, then they will tend to react to it. Then they try to do away with that state because they think it is bad meditation. So they want the good meditation. They don't want the bad meditation. I think off it, off it, off it, just off it. It's okay. Just off it. Okay, thank you. Never mind, no need to adjust. Just off that one. Thank you so much. It is part of the Dhamma, understand or not? Because without this, you will not learn. Your senses are open, understand or not? The hearing consciousness. That's why you are a human being. Your senses are open. External sense data can come anytime, understand or not? So when they arise, if you don't understand, you tend to react. There is a tendency to react. Then you will create your own sensual desire, you will. Then when you have that emotion, your mind stir. That's how you cannot understand the meditation and the mind. Then you start to do things without proper understanding. This is the explanation. And this one is very good. Because of your dislike towards such unpleasant feeling, your mind will try to do something else, like chanting, to either suppress it or make it go away. This is one of the skillful means, which actually Sister Lee tried. And it go away, but another location, the pain appear again, and it's more severe. So as chanting is just another skillful means to train the mind, and is still within the field of thoughts. Hence, by doing so, you have lost your focus, because meditation consists of two steps. The first step is to develop the training of the mind to be constantly aware, leading to the heedfulness, or apamada. Then the second step is to use the trained mind in heedfulness to meditate, or cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. And within the Noble Eightfold Path, you have your four foundations of mindfulness, or the right view, right speech, right action, right thought, right livelihood, right effort, right sati and samadhi. Everything is there. Understanding this will enable you to just silence your mind and patiently relax your body and mind, to allow the sensation to be without any like or dislike for it. Because it is the nature of this body to develop that sensation. Like I say, your senses are open. So if you sit without understanding how to relax and how to harmonize, then it will transform. The qi flow will be blocked. Then it will create a sensation which is different, or what they call a phenomena. Then when you don't have that liking for that sensation or phenomena or feeling, your memory tell you it's pain. That's how you react to it. That's how the hindrance of mind comes to be. So this is a very important understanding. If you know how to allow the sensation to be without any like or dislike for it, because you understand the nature of this body to develop that sensation, if you do not know how to relax to enable the qi to flow through the blockage, that's how it arises. So just be aware or mindful always to observe what is going on within your form and mind, and to investigate via mindfulness to understand how the movement of mind from one state to another comes to be. This is meditation. If you want to know what vipassana is, this is what it is. How your mind state move from one state to another. That's why it's always oscillating between what? The duality, and as a like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. Yeah. If it's something pleasurable, nice, you grasp and you cling. Sensual desire come to be. If something you don't like, you tend to have the tendency to reject. That's how you have aversion, unhappiness, dislike. Then you label it pain. This is how human beings react. That's why you don't understand what is meditation. You behave the same like any other lay person or cultivator. For those who understand, you will observe how your mind is conditioned into all this, how it become what it is. So this is the dependent origination. That is to understand how the stirring of the mind come to be, and how the mind can be conditioned into negativity, emotion, selfishness, and fear, etc. Via your delusion, upon seeing something, or hearing something, or thinking of something, or in this case, the tactile sensation, when you are not able to relax, when you are not able to actually let things be, then this thing disturb you. Then how do you overcome it? The Buddha actually teach 5 ways. There are 5 ways to overcome negative, unwholesome thought that has arisen. Like you already label it as pain, or anger, or hatred, or dislike. Then, first, the Buddha said, you can think of the direct opposite wholesome state. Example, if there is anger, then develop metta. This was what he taught the son, Rahula, the 7th type of meditation. The first one is this one. He said, cultivate the loving kindness meditation. It will help you overcome anger. Then, the second example is, if there is cruelty, then develop compassion. He also taught Rahula that. Then if there is fear, develop your faith. There are other mental states you can also think of the appropriate opposite wholesome state to reverse the unwholesome thought. Because when you have metta, loving kindness, when you radiate love and kindness and well-being, you don't have anger inside. Understand not? Your mind can only do one thing at a time. So when there is love, there can never be any unwholesome thought or unwholesome state. So this is one of the way. If it doesn't work after some time, like any good food, after a while it doesn't work, then he said, go to the second one. Think of the consequence of holding on to the unwholesome thought or evil roots. If you do not abandon it, then the evil roots are the roots of all evil, and it will condition you into an evil person. Is that what you want? Example, anger can condition you into hatred and violence. An angry person can kill, harm, and abuse others. So when you see the danger of holding on to these evil roots, the consequence of it, you have to determine to change, because your life, how you want to live, depends on your choice and your decision. Just give me a minute. Sorry about that. So the second one is think of the consequence of having the evil thought or unwholesome thought in your heart. The Buddha also called this what they call unwholesome thought or evil roots, the 3 poison. It's like a poison. It can kill you spiritually. So if you hold on to these evil roots, It's like you are holding on to the tree poison. Spiritually, you can be killed by it. So if you see the danger, and like I said, your life, you decide how you want to live. If you choose to have this, what they call wisdom and understanding to free yourself, then you should determine to abandon this evil root or the tree, what they call poison, from your heart. So the second one is very crucial, very important. That's why the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, or the three poison, you must understand them. You must wake up to their danger. You must see how it can condition you into evil. They are the roots of all evil. If you don't believe, you go and find out yourself. You go and try. Every time you got anger, selfishness and fear, you find out, is it an evil root? It can actually transform you into a very evil person. You can become a monster out of jealousy, out of hatred, out of selfishness and all those things. Then the third one is meditative. The Buddha said it's very simple. You just relax and just let things be. This is the meditative way. We are understanding that the natural state of mind before it's stirring is already in the meditative state of peace, calmness and silent inner awareness. You always remember and ask yourself, before I am angry, before I become stirred, activated or conditioned into this negativity, I was peaceful. But everything happened later, after I hear something that I don't like to hear, or after I see something that I don't like to see, or after that type of thought arise, the unwholesome thought that conditioned me to recall to mind or memory this unhappy event or life situation. That's how I become angry, unhappy, emotional. That's how my mind stirs. So the stirring of the mind is conditioned by something else. Before that it was peaceful. Then you know the answer. The key and the solution to it is not to react and not to allow the mind to stir. Which means what? You need to have wisdom, understanding. You must have this ability to relax and let things be, sitting as they are. And this wisdom is not easy to come by. But in the meditative training, you can try it out. Every time you're already angry or emotional, you just silence your mind and find out what happened. The agitation will cease to be. Then when it ceases to be, what happened? The mind settle down. It does not stir anymore. It does not react anymore. Then what happened? The tranquility, the peace, the quietness return to your mind. Then you realize, again, you are back to normal. You are peaceful again. Your mind is at ease again. And this is the joy. This is the peace. That's why when you don't think and don't react, you are back to your original state of stillness, silence, peace within, awareness. So the third one is very simple when you understand. If you don't understand, you do the opposite. Yeah? You know why you do the opposite? Because you don't know. The original state of mind was already peaceful. So what you do? You want to do away the pain. You created the pain, then you use your thought to do away the pain. That's why you come up with method and technique. Try chanting, try this, note that. Thinking you can do away. So what is all this going on? Ask yourself, what are you doing? You don't understand meditation. The original state is already the meditative state. No need to do anything. Then why are you doing all these things? Because you think what people tell you is very, very, what they call, is always the opposite. Logical. Very logical is that. I don't like pain. I do something to get rid of it, isn't it? And you will all agree, isn't it? Because pain is not a good mental state, isn't it? I want to have peace, isn't it? So this brings us back to the Tuesday class. J. Krishnamurti quote, very good. He said the human being's problem is you have an idea, but you never act accordingly. You know what is idea? Your idea is you label this as pain. Then you got the idea that you must not have pain. You want to have peace. So the idea, through the thought process, trigger off the mind, which is the thought, to do something to get rid of this pain and want to become peaceful. But that peace is an idea. Because you don't want to investigate. You don't want to find out. You don't want to understand. When you understand, there is no more problem. No more doing. Understand that? The moment you understand the original state of mind is peace, why must you do anything? Why must you go and labor it? Understand that? So the understanding free you. You don't have to do anything already. But you don't want to choose to develop the understanding. You just want to do what the mind tell you to do. Understand that? And that mind is deluded. That's why it keep on telling you to do deluded thing. That's how you cannot free. And now you start to laugh. Why they do all this? They note this, note that. Try this, try that. Then, in the name of meditation, thinking that they are meditating. So this understanding is very important. The third way that the Buddha teach, you have to reflect and contemplate deep into it. Then when you understand, the moment you understand, your mind is free. No need to do anything. You already peaceful inside. You only need to silence your mind. Don't try anything. Initially, the method and the technique, the skillful means that they teach you, is only required to train the mind. So don't get it mixed up. Don't confuse the two. Before the mind is trained, it thinks a lot, very heedless. That's why that mind cannot meditate. The hindrance is there. So what you need is to train this mind first. So the moment you train this mind, you have clarity, then you can see clearly. And then you understand. And when you understand, you don't do anymore. Understand? But the understanding frees you. Then you realize, by not doing anything, there is the real meditation. Understand? Because the thought cannot meditate. Understand? The thought is the culprit, actually. If you don't understand what thought is, thought is the stirring of the mind. The Mandarin is very good. Mahayana. You heard of this word, not? Qi xing dong nian. Now, those who know Mandarin, this is beautiful. When you arise the mind, the thinking mind, activity of mind, sankhara, come to be. Understand? Qi xing, qi is arise. Once the mundane mind, the thinking mind arise, you stir. The nian to, the thinking come about. That's why you don't have to do that. Why do you want to stir the mind? Why do you want to arise anything? So when you understand this, you actually immediately know how to meditate and you can free your mind. And the Mandarin word is very good, I tell you. Those who don't know Mandarin, you better go and learn a little bit. It helps you so much. I'm English educator. But I was lucky, I got a little bit of this pupil's own language, P-O-L. And I was lucky because my whole family, 9 brothers and sisters, all go to Chinese school. I'm the only guinea pig who go to English school. You also? Before? You Chinese school, very good. Very good. So those who have parents who send you to Chinese school, you are very blessed actually. And the Mandarin words are very clear when it comes to Dhamma. Really. And if you know both, you actually benefit a lot. So always remember, Qi Xing Dong Nian. And it's very beautiful. And this one comes from Pure Land. Do you know that? Not Mahayana, Pure Land. Wu Liang Su Jing. Amitabha Jing. So all these are very beautiful Dhamma. The fourth one is most important, the wisdom part. The Buddha said, trace the origination factor and then retrospectively reverse it via cultivation of the mindfulness of Dhamma. That is Dhamma Nupassana. That is, via the cultivation of mindfulness of the six internal and six external sense bases. This is to develop the wisdom to free. So this one, the Buddha said, after you have the ability to confirm the teaching through the third way, just relax and let things be, then your mind peaceful. Then you tell yourself, oh, no wonder I couldn't understand. My mind stir, and I thought it's my mind is not peaceful because I must do away with that stirring. No. As long as I don't have delusion, the stirring stop. So now you understand, you just relax and let things be aware, silent. Then the meditative state return. So now you tell yourself, I can investigate with this silent mind. How it stir? Because originally it was not stir, peaceful. Because now I able to do it. Understand? My mind is already peaceful. So the next time it stir, I find out. That's why the Buddha say, you cultivate Dhamma Nupassana. You have this awareness to be aware of the six internal sense bases and the six external sense bases. The internal is the mind. External is the six sense door. Understand? The five physical senses and the mind. So upon contact, something happened. And then you realize your stirring always arise when you cannot understand what is happening. Means upon contact between a vibration or a sound, understand or not? External form and the hearing. Yeah? Through contact with the ear, hearing consciousness come to be. The moment you become conscious of this hearing consciousness, you deludedly grasp and cling and say, I hear. Then you are conditioned into it. The egoic mind comes to be and you stir. You react because you think I hear. Understand? I see. I think. Then this ego stir. You are affected by what you see, what you hear, and what you think. But when you see clearly through the meditation, no, these are all conditions arising. Actually, it's automatic, like just now the fan, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, the sound. You have senses open. The internal one receive it. Then it becomes conscious. Then why do you stir? Because you don't understand. Form and mind. Condition arising, cause of phenomena. They come and they go. Means what? Impermanent. The moment you grasp and cling, suffering comes to be because you want it your way. You say this is disturbing. Your views and opinion, you react to what you hear, what you see, and what you think. That's how the mind stirs. So when you know that this is the one that caused all your problem in life, all of your hindrance of mind, sensual desire at you, that's why I say every moment, every instant, human beings are subject to that. And they say they meditate. And they cannot see all this. So now you start to understand. Then you tell yourself, when I have this wisdom, the Buddha say, retrospectively I reverse it. How am I going to reverse it? The next time I see, the next time I hear, the next time I think, or I perceive something, I'm going to become very mindful. Understand? I'm going to be very, very alert and aware. Then I find out, how did I stir? What caused me to stir? It's always like Krishnamurti said, your memory, your views, your idea, your perception, and opinion of what things are, your conditioning. That's how you react. If you don't have all this, if you have wisdom, and you are able to see things as they are and accept things as they are, your mind has equanimity, enlightenment factor. Your mind has samadhi. It cannot stir. That's why at the moment of sense door consciousness, at the moment of sense experience, if you have what they call wisdom, yoni so manasikara. Manasikara is attention. Yoni so is wise. Wise attention. If there is wise attention at moment of sense door activity, the mind does not stir. It only stirs when there is delusion. That's why upon contact, feeling arise. Feeling, condition, craving because of delusion. Because of sakayaditi. Because of ayoniso manasikara. There is no wisdom at the moment of sense experience. So, dhammanupassana is very important. And that is the real vipassana. That's why then you silence your mind, relax, aware within. Then you find out how your mind stirs. How throughout the day you create your own suffering, misery, emotion. This is the real meditation. Even in the sitting, it's the same. Through whatever sense activity that arises. That's why when you silent, everything becomes clear. Everything comes to be. When you are actively using your thought, you never understand the thought cannot meditate. What do you try to realize and achieve in meditation? The state that is beyond thought, beyond mind, beyond time. And what are you using? The instrument that you use is thought-based. So how can thought-based go beyond thought and free you? Cannot. And you know what the living being do? They use the thought, the mind, read the sutta. They interpret and come up with method and technique to meditate. Using what? The thought again. That's why thought-based meditation cannot free you. You only entangle yourself, create more and more of this. Understand? No? You must come to understand the two aspects of meditation, the two parts. First, train the mind. Training of the mind, yes, you need to have some skillful means, method, technique to train. Once it's trained, the Buddha said, your mind is silent, aware, relaxed within, and there is heedfulness, apamada. When you have that, don't use the thought anymore. Use the silent mind to meditate, to understand, to see things as they are. Understand, no? And develop the wisdom. And that part, a lot of living being and meditator and cultivator don't understand. That's why they are doing thought-based meditation. They use the thought, the mind to note this, note that, to concentrate on this and concentrate on that. That is the problem with today's teaching. And most people still don't quite understand what this is. So it takes a while. It's not so easy. Is it clear to you now? You slowly go back, reflect, contemplate. Then the moment you understand, I tell you, you will laugh at yourself for what you have been doing for the last 20 to 30 years. Because the day I realized all this, that was 20 over to 30 over years ago, I said, no wonder the living being cannot break through, cannot understand. And I got a tough time trying to explain and share all this. Because very few people got mindfulness. Has the ability to silence their mind. Only a handful, very few. So now the condition is better because the consciousness has improved. And you all have a better condition to receive all this. Okay, we come to the last one. The last one is very simple. The Buddha said, if all the above four ways also cannot help you, then you must use your own self-determination as recommended by the Buddha. He said, that is with clenched teeth and with your tongue towards your palate. Is the spelling correct? Palate? Above here, your mouth, the palate. Is the spelling correct or not? I'm not very sure. Let's assume it's correct. If it's wrong, you go and change yourself. My English is no good, I must admit to you. You should determine strongly to abandon the negative thought. Means you use your willpower because nobody else can help you. All the meditative way that the Buddha taught under 3 and 4 also you cannot apply. So you use your own determination and will. Otherwise, the Buddha also cannot help you. Okay, we finish. We turn to the sutta proper. Yes. So this sutta proper is very important. Verse for opening a sutta. Part 1, page 1. But there is a page before it, we read that one also. Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. You see, those Mahayana, they treasure so much the sutta. And their opening verse is, there is a lot of gratitude. Understand or not? So, you should develop this type of mind. Like this opening sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma. See, all the three words they use, unsurpassed, means what? Nothing can be better. Profound, really profound. And wonderful, isn't it? True emptiness is wonderful existence, isn't it? It's difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. You know how long is one aeon or not? He said, hundreds of millions of aeons. You know the meaning of aeons, and you know how rare or not. So when you have the condition to have this, do not take for granted, he said. Then they said, I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it. You must do that, understand or not? A lot of people see and hear. After that, left ear come in, right ear go out. Then what happened? They don't receive. They also want to develop impermanent, anicchang, come and go. That's why if you don't receive, you let it go. Then it come and it never go in. It go out. So when you say come and go, it go in. It come to you and it go in. Then you don't have to hold on to it. Then that time you can let go and release it. Because once it went in, receive, and you uphold means what? Leave it. Understand not? Uphold is to leave it. Not L-I-F-T. L-I-V-E. If you know the theory and cannot leave it, useless, understand not? Like stock market, I always say buy low, sell high. You know the theory, you cannot do. Every time you lose money, so you cannot leave it, you cannot uphold that principle, understand not? So leave, L-I-V-E. Just now, be show me the hand. Leave out. No, not the leave. It's L-I-V-E. So you see, all the opening statement is very beautiful. And this brings me to another example, which Mahayana also always actually developed this important understanding. He said, this one I heard before. Actually, it's very meaningful. He said, when you commit a karmic negativity act or offense, karmic offense, is it? You have to reflect and contemplate this way, is it? Every human being or living being that you commit karmic offense, you know who you commit to or not? They always say, it's a future Buddha. Understand? 未来佛. Means, if you do a karmic act or karmic offense against a fellow living being, if one day this one become a fully enlightened one, a Buddha, you know how severe your karmic offense is or not. So they treat every living being as a potential Buddha. That's why they dare not commit any karmic offense. And that is how they train their mind. They know the seriousness of karmic offense. I forgot the Mandarin word. I forgot. When I heard it, it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful. You all go back and find out yourself. I cannot recall. I heard about it long time ago. Master Xuan Hua used to say this. He used to say this. Okay, now you turn to page 1. The Heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta. Today is a sutta proper. Okay. Oh, today a lot of phone call. Why? You just give me a minute. Sorry, huh? My brother called me. I don't know why today. So many people call, most of them from my brother. Then just now one was from one of the Kayanamita. Never mind. Okay, now, yes. Yes. Okay, good. There is a very good suggestion from Sister Lee. There is another page before the opening verse, where we have to recite the salutation to Sakyamuni Buddha. Namo Bunsi Sijia Muni Pho. Okay, I think we will pay respect and we chant before we start this sutta. Okay.
Namo Bunsi Sijia Muni Pho. Namo Bunsi Sijia Muni Pho. Namo Bunsi Sijia Muni Pho. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dharma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of eons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom and Tathagata's true meaning.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Yeah. It's very good. Thank you. This one, the Mahayana, do a lot. But the Theravada seldom do. I don't know why. So it's a tradition that you can learn. That's why you have the understanding. You can learn from both sides. Actually, both sides have their good teaching. Their good, what they call, principles. Theravada, although some they say the lesser vehicle, the smaller vehicle, but all the basic teaching are there, the foundation are all there, and there are a lot of good things about Theravada. But of course, Mahayana also same. They got equal amount of very, very beautiful things, and they are way beyond actually, because they express and elaborate the teaching way beyond what the Theravada can understand and express. So when you understand both sides, you see the beauty of the Buddha Dharma, the way it's been expressed. It's just like when you are with maybe primary school or just secondary school or up to form 3. To you think arithmetic is only addition, subtraction, division, and multiplication. But then you go to form 4, you realize there is so much more thing to arithmetic. They don't call it arithmetic anymore, they call it mathematics. Then you have pure maths, you have applied maths, you have further maths, you have a lot of type of maths, numerical methods and all those things for yourself. So all this, you will start to understand and learn. So Mahayana is something like that, the higher teaching. When you move into it, there are so many more things. But all this, you need the basic, understand? Without the basic, you cannot understand all this. So if you don't have the basic, means like your foundation is not proper. When you build the building, you will have problem. The foundation, once it gives way, the whole building structure will collapse. That's why you must establish a very stable base. Then when you move from Theravada to Mahayana, you are very safe. And that is really true. I see a lot of danger in those that go into Mahayana straight away. A lot of danger. And most of these great masters and teachers are able to do it is because they have their past life cultivation and practices. That's why they don't need to go through the Theravada. But for those who don't have that, you better go to the Theravada basic foundation. Understand the basic teaching. And then when you understand the basic teaching, all the higher teaching becomes so simple, so easy to follow, and a lot of clarity. And you have a lot of understanding behind. Okay, we will start. The opening verse. The heart of Prajna Paramita Sutta. When Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was practicing the profound Prajna Paramita, he illuminated the five skandhas and saw that they are all empty, and he crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty. So this first paragraph is very simple now. After you have gone through all the introduction, explanation, so it's very easy to understand now. So the opening statement by the Bodhisattva Kuan Yin or Avalokiteshvara is, while she was practicing the profound Prajna Paramita. You know what is Prajna? Is wisdom. Paramita is perfection. So when she was cultivating the profound perfection of wisdom, he actually illuminated the five skandhas, which is your five aggregates of form and maya. And what did she saw? Yeah? They are all empty. And because of that, she crossed beyond all suffering and difficulty. So the opening statement already so powerful. Then after that, he spoke to Sariputta. Who is Sariputta? The chief disciple of the Buddha, foremost in wisdom. He wanted Sariputta to understand this. Very profound, very beautiful. He said, Sariputta, all dhammas are empty of characteristics. The opening statement to Sariputta is this. They are not produced. Understand or not? Not destroyed, not defiled, not pure, and they neither increase or diminish. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form, no feeling, no cognition. Here, Xuan Hua used sankhara differently. Cognition. Oh, sorry, perception. He used perception as cognition. When you recognize something, it's like you perceive something. Then formation is the word they use for sankhara, or mental activity, or consciousness. These are the five aggregates. Our Pali one is rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. So rupa is form, same. Vedana is feeling, same. But sanya, our English translation is perception. They use cognition. Make a note. Then formation. Mental formation. This is only one of the many aspects of sankhara. So sankhara is actually more than formation. It's actually mental activity. Everything that your mind can do. The mental formation, your mental intention, your mental picture that you create. All of your mental activity, the planning, the scheming, the reaction, the emotion, all the mental states, they are all sankhara. And the last one is consciousness. You can become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactilely feel, and what you think. So these are the five aggregates of form and mind. Then after that, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva told Sariputta, no ear, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, and no mind. No sight, no sound, no smell, no taste, no object of touch or dhamma. No feel of the eyes, up to then, including no feel of mind consciousness. These are all the 18 sense rhyme. You have the senses, the five physical senses, together with your mind, the six sense bases. Then you have your, what they call, object of the senses. Like, if your ear, you need what? Vibration. So it can be in the form of sound, noise or music or lightning or thunder or whatever. So these are the, what they call, sense data. Then when it comes to seeing, what do you need? Color, shape and form. Understand or not? Then when it comes to the food, there will be some flavor. You can use your taste bud to taste. or you can use your nose to smell. So these are all the taste, the smell. Then the object of touch is actually your tactile sensation. The tactile senses, like hot and cold. If something sharp pinch you, then you will have this tactile sensation. So they call object of sense or touch. Then the last one they call Dhamma. Actually, Dhamma is one of the word used. Dhamma is actually truth. But actually, the last one is whatever that your mind actually. You see, this mind also has its own object, sense data. Understand not? And the main sense data is actually your perception, the external form that you bring into mind. But here they use Dhamma, because under the four foundations of mindfulness, Dhamma Nupassana, they always talk about mental object, mindfulness of mental object. Actually, I don't quite agree to that word. But like I said, no right, no wrong. It's only how people understand it. Dhamma Nupassana means mindfulness of Dhamma, understand? And Dhamma, not necessary mind object, understand? Dhamma are the teaching, the truth that the Buddha teach. So when it comes to Dhamma, you have to be a bit careful. Anyway, these are the terms they use. Then there is no feel of the eye, up to and including no feel of mind consciousness. Means the consciousness, the six type of consciousness, seeing consciousness, the feel of the eye, hearing consciousness, the feel of hearing. Then you got smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. Then he say, and no ignorant, and no ending of ignorant, up to and including no old age, no death, or ending of old age and death. There is no suffering, no accumulation, no extinction, and no way. Actually, here the English word is a little bit confusing. No way. You think it's no way. No, this is the Four Noble Truths. No Noble Eightfold Path, actually. No suffering. There is no noble truth of suffering, understand? It doesn't mean no suffering. That's an English word when you translate, it's different. The Mandarin is very clear. Ku ji mie dao, the Four Noble Truths. Ku ji mie dao. Don't have the noble truth of dukkha. Don't have the noble truth of cause arising or suffering. But the second noble truth, the Mahayana, that's why it's slightly different already. They don't use the explanation of the cause behind suffering. The second noble truth the Buddha always used under the Theravada teaching. There is a cause behind all suffering, and this cause is called craving. They never use that. They say accumulation. There is a noble truth that talk about accumulation of dukkha. Actually, it's quite similar. When you trigger of suffering, means what? There is a cause behind it. When there is a cause behind your suffering, means there is accumulation of suffering in it. Otherwise, how can the cause come to be? Without delusion, without ignorance, the cause cannot come to be. So the cause is always craving, conditioned by your delusion, your ignorance. So the cause behind suffering is the one that conditions the accumulation of karma. That's why they call accumulation. So that is a slight difference. It run a little bit. But not so bad. If you understand the true principle, then the meaning is still intact. But the more precise one is the Theravada one, the cause of arising or suffering. So the accumulation there, you make a note, is actually the cause arising of suffering. The second noble truth, also no more. Then the third noble truth, the cessation of dukkha, also no more. Then the fourth noble truth, there is also no more noble eightfold path to cultivate. And no understanding and no attaining. See? There is nothing to understand and nothing to attain. You should panic on. Now, from the Theravada tradition, what the hell is going on? The Buddha talked about Four Noble Truths. The Buddha talk about birth, old age, sickness, and death. This fellow say everything also don't have. No enlightenment, no attainment, no four noble truth, nothing. Everything don't have. Then you say, this teaching cannot be true. Because you don't understand. Because this is the profound wisdom. Perfection of wisdom. That's why he spoke to Sariputta. At the Theravada level, just like the lower secondary, you only have addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. And when they talk about the higher teaching, they say, hey, no, there is differential equation. There is calculus. You don't bluff, my teacher say don't have. Because that student don't understand. But actually, when you go to Form 5, Form 6, university, then you realize, oh, yeah, actually God, all this God. Then you understand that at a higher level, when your wisdom transforms, when you go beyond thought, beyond mind, all this no more. Because the Dhamma is still within the field of thought, understand not? Mundane, understand not? That's why the Buddha got his analogy. When you cross the ocean of suffering, you need a raft, isn't it? What is a raft? Something to allow you to steer across, isn't it? So the Dhamma is like a raft, understand not? Can take you across. But when you reach the other shore, the Buddha asks you, are you so stupid as to carry the raft on your shoulder and walk with it? You don't need it anymore, is it? Then you let it behind, understand? When it has served its purpose and allow you to cross to the other shore, you don't need to carry it along. Otherwise, it becomes a burden, a craving. It binds you. So all this you will come to understand. There is no contradiction. Okay, we go on. Because nothing is attained or realized, the Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajna Paramita, is unimpeded in his mind. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid. And he leaves distorted dream thinking far behind. Ultimately, Nirvana. You know what is distorted dream thinking or not? They use the Mandarin word Tian Tao. Mandarin word is very good. Tian Tao. How do you describe in English? Inverted. Distorted or inverted view. That's why the living being are very pitiful. What you think is the truth, apparently, very logical, is always the reverse of the reality. The reality is always the opposite of what you think. When you think it exists, it actually don't exist. It's actually empty. But to you, it's so real, isn't it? Everything is so real. The consciousness is so real that I can feel. I can experience them. I can touch. This form of mind like so real to you, isn't it? Everything that you come to experience in this world like so real to you, isn't it? Why? You use your thought, you use your mind, you use consciousness. Actually, finally, what are they? It's just consciousness, understand? The phenomenal world is a world of consciousness. Come and go, come and go. And how real can consciousness be? Just energy, isn't it? Conscious, gone. How real can that be? And you say very real. Cry, grief, sorrow, lamentation, fear. What are living beings doing? Because you cannot understand the mind. You cling on to external form. Never understand that external form is manifestation of mind. Understand? The phenomenal world, external appearances, they all arise from the mind. Where mind come to be, everything come to be. Through your perception, you bring them all in. And they become real. That's why you deludedly grasp and cling. That's how you create your own suffering and your own misery. And you are playing with what? Consciousness. Playing with the mundane mind. Thinking that it's you. Deluded by the five aggregate of form and mind. That's why living beings are very pitiful. That's why this word I like. He is not afraid. Because nothing is attained. The Bodhisattva, through reliance on Prajna Paramita, means perfection of wisdom, is unimpeded in his mind. Means there is no more delusion, understand? No more impediment, nothing blocked, nothing obscure. Like the cloud dispersed, clarity, seeing things as they are. Because there is no impediment, he is not afraid. And he lives distorted dream thinking. Last time, the living being one, inverted view, distorted view, or the wrong view. Yeah? Far behind. That's why ultimately realize enlightenment, Nibbana. And this is beautiful. Yeah? And the next paragraph is even more beautiful. That's why you must know the importance of this Heart Sutta. All Buddhas of the three periods of time realize or attain Anuttara Samyat Sambohi, means the perfection of Buddhahood. Yeah? True reliance on Prajna Paramitas. Understand not? You see how beautiful this teaching is. All Buddhas, you say, all the three periods of time, means past, present, and future, they all realize this Buddhahood. Or Anuttara Samyat Sambohi, through reliance on Prajna Paramita. Therefore, know that Prajna Paramita is a great spiritual mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequal mantra. It can remove all suffering. It is genuine and not false. That is why the mantra of Prajna Paramita was spoken. Recite it like this. Gate gate para gate. Parasam gate bohi swatwa. So this is how they chant the Mahayana. And this sutta is so profound, so beautiful. That's why your heart opens out when you understand. And Kuan Yin Bodhisattva is really, really very, very wise. Very, very wise. That's why this sutta is the heart of the Prajna Paramita Sutta. Okay. We finished the sutta proper. Huh? But we haven't gone into the explanation yet. How much time do I have? Ayo. 4:30 already. Finish already. So meditation. Okay, we stop here. Huh? Okay, the general explanation, I think I will continue next week. Huh? You go back and read about it. Try to understand it. Huh? Okay, this meditation, because everybody is... we will do the meditation straight away. Huh? I don't think I need to let you have any more of this instruction. Because now you know how to meditate. Huh? After I explain, you just silence your mind. If you still need to train your mind, then you do the mind sweeping method, you do metta, okay? You train that, you try to anchor it to anything, anapanasati or any of the object of meditation that you are familiar with that is suitable for you. Then after that, what you do is you just silence your mind, always just silence your mind. Don't try to do anything, just silent. Remain peaceful, relax and silent. Just aware. That is the real meditation. Then after that, you can be silent at anywhere that is suitable or appropriate for your nature. You can hold it to your object of meditation, or you can relax and anchor it to your heart. Finally, when your mindfulness is very stable, you already have the ability to train your mind, then you have to finally let go of the object of meditation. Means when the breathing, everything becomes very subtle, everything becomes so quiet, peaceful, then you just silence everything. Don't even have to hold on to the object of meditation. Just let go of everything. Let your mind realize a state of natural awareness, sati. When your mind is in sati, that is the real meditation. Then you can anchor it to your heart if you want to. Or any point within your body that you can allow the mind to rest and stay there. Because initially you still need to anchor somewhere. But after a while, when your daily mindfulness stabilizes, you don't need to anchor your mind anymore. The mind can be anywhere. It's in the state of sati, always mindful, always relaxed. There is always clarity. Yeah. Okay? Then after that, maybe I will go through with you this very important transcript, or what they call a compilation of email that I have written. Understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Maybe we can start at 5 o'clock. Okay, you can maybe start your meditation. Then in half an hour's time, I will ring the bell. You just relax your body and mind. Then you silence your mind and you start your meditation. Those who already know how to meditate, you can start straight away. Those who need to train your mind, you do the mind sipping method, you do the metta, then after that you start. Okay? You all want me to off the light for you? I will off the light for you. You all can start your meditation now. Okay. Just relax yourself. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Then somebody help to on the light. This light. The middle switch from the left. No, from the left. Somewhere there. Yes. Thank you. Okay. Today, we will go direct into this, what they call understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha. This is a photostat copy of all the email compilation that I have written to various Buddhist group and Dharma friends during the early days. It was actually compiled in the year 2007, 14 May 2007. That was about 4 years, coming to 5 years. Okay. Anybody don't have this book? Anybody don't have this book? Oh, you don't have. Yeah, you can have this copy. Yeah. Adrian, Pastor. Oh, then I can lend you one. Nah, Adrian, I lend you one. You return afterwards. No more. I got one copy left. Okay, you turn to the first page. The title is Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha. I realize this is what most meditators don't understand. So this is a very important title. Then you turn to what they call, there's a page. Okay, this page. You see this page? Okay. Below the title, Understanding the Meditation as Taught by the Buddha is a compilation of email written by me, Brother Teo Kien Kun, to various Buddhist groups and Dharma friends. They are both overseas and local. Then down there is for free distribution only, donated by Kayanamita friends, BJ, Malaysia, May 2007. Okay, then you turn to the content page. Under the content page, you have the introduction, acknowledgement, words of wisdom by the Buddha, email number one, handful of leaves, email number two, what is meditation one, then email number three, what is meditation two. Then email number four is very important. It talks about the three turnings and 12 modes of the Four Noble Truths. Then email number five is on meditation. Metta and Vipassana meditation for beginners. Then email number six is breath-centered Anapanasati and four posture meditation. Then email number seven is developing calm and insight. Then there's appendix A. This appendix is actually the full Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. This is the first sermon that the Buddha spoke. Okay, I will start with the introduction. You listen carefully. It is Brother Teo's sincere hope that Dhamma and spiritual practitioners, seekers, friends, and meditator. I put in inverted comma. The reason being, there is no meditator. But we need to communicate, we need to use word. We'll be able to make use of these enclosed short notes or email to develop a better and true understanding of the Buddhist meditation as taught by the Buddha, so that they may progress along the path of Dhamma to become more virtuous, noble and wiser, to benefit themselves and to benefit others. So this is very important. So the summary of content, there is a number on the left, then Dhamma heading and summary of email. So the first email number one, handful of leaves. This is the first email dated 22nd of August 2006, and it was written to a United States-based Buddhist group. There is an address, but not nice to quote. So I just put xxx@yahoo.com, and it talks about the handful of leaves, as emphasized by the Buddha at Kosambi in the Simsapa group over 2,500 years ago. He also stressed on the importance of the Four Noble Truths, or the handful of leaves as taught by the Buddha. So this is a very important email, because this is a Buddhist based group. They are quite sincere in understanding the Dhamma. So there were a lot of interaction on their website. So I happened to have the condition and I went in. Then I saw there were conditions to explain certain things. So that's why I wrote this email. After when we share, you will understand. The handfuls of leaves are what the Buddha actually explained to the monk. Because when he saw the monk arguing, asking a lot of all those what they call questions that are not so relevant to the cultivation and the practice, the Buddha actually spoke about this very often. Then there was one day, it seems, according to the scripture, at Simsapa group, he just took a handful of leaf on his hand that he asked the monk, the old bhikkhu, which is small, the leaves on my hand or the leaves in the forest? Obviously, the bhikkhu will answer, the leaves in the forest are a lot more, isn't it? Then the Buddha answer, is it? Yes, exactly the same. What I have known and understood is like the trees, the leaves that is in the forest, above the tree and all over. But what I have taught you is only this handful. Then he asked the monk, do you know why? Then he explained. He said, because this handful of leaves, they are very useful, very important. They are very conducive for enlightenment in the here and the now. It can bring about the wisdom to free you from all suffering. It can bring about enlightenment in the here and the now. It can overcome all of your suffering. And what are these handful of leaves? That's how he actually proceeded to explain. They are none other than the Four Noble Truths, is it? Noble truths are truths which can make you enlightened, is it? That's why it's called noble truth. Truth that can make you noble ones or enlightened ones. So that was the condition. So they were arguing about a few things I cannot recall so long ago. Something about spirituality, non-spirituality, then the Buddhist teaching and many other teaching. So there were a lot of Q&A exchanges. Then I wrote this to actually make them understand the very important focus that the Buddha wants us all cultivators to understand. You just focus on the handful of leaves, then all of your problem will be resolved. All of your understanding can come about. You don't have to worry about all the other things, those that are not so relevant and appropriate for cultivation. Then the second email is, what is meditation one? This second email was written 1 week later, 29 August 2006, and was written as a reply to one person, Mr. Something, who inquired on meditation. It explained the importance of knowing what is meditation as taught by the Buddha. Then there is a follow-up email, continuation. What is meditation do? The third email dated 30th August 06 was written to some Dhamma practitioner from the United States-based Buddhist group website, and it stressed on the importance of avoiding meditation question that leads to doubt. We are not knowing or understanding what is meditation. The final summary of the First Noble Truth and the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths were introduced as topic for contemplation and reflection. This is very good because the condition at that time happened to be such that it can benefit them. So that's why I share this. Then after that, there's a follow-up email. The fourth enclosure email, dated 30th and 31st August 2006, were based on a very beautiful question by one sister, Miss Something. It explained the three turnings and the 12 modes of the Four Noble Truths leading to the three types of correspondent wisdom: Suttamaya Panya, Chintamaya Panya, and Bhavanamaya Panya, as taught by the Buddha via his first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. A copy of this Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or the first sermon, has been included under Appendix A to serve as reference. So you know what this sutta is or not. After the Buddha became enlightened, he actually decided not to share and teach. But then Brahma Sahampati can read his mind. So he came down all the way from the Brahma realm to appeal to the Buddha to teach, to share. He said, there are some who has little dust who can understand your teaching. So that was the reason why he agreed. Then he checked using his abhinya, special ability. He realized the two teachers that taught him earlier on, they are people with little dust. So if he were to explain the Dhamma to them, they should be able to understand very fast. But too bad, one of them just passed away the night before, and the other one week ago. So he got no more condition to actually benefit them. So what he did was, he surveyed the world for the five ascetics that followed him last time. Venerable Asaji, Kondanya, and others, the five wise men. Then he realized that they were somewhere, quite a distance. So he decided to walk there to meet up with them. And the first sermon or teaching that he actually spoke when he arrived there and met up with them was this Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. And it talks about the Four Noble Truths and its three turning, and it's very beautiful, very profound, and very important. That's why he started out this sutta by saying, you have to avoid the two extremes, self-mortification and self-indulgence, sensual indulgence and self-mortification. Then he also talked about transcending the duality, to go beyond the duality. Then he emphasized the importance of the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths, how it led to enlightenment in the here and now. Even he himself as the Buddha to be at that time, he has to develop the understanding of the Four Noble Truths through these three turnings and 12 modes. Otherwise, he cannot proclaim to be the enlightened one. So this shows the importance of the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. The importance of understanding it in this way. Okay, then we go on. Then there is this fifth enclosed email dated 5th October 2006 and 8th August 2006. They were written to a Dhamma friend, one sister, who wanted to learn how to develop the Buddhist meditation as taught by the Buddha, to help her develop the faith, inner peace and wisdom to live a happy life, peaceful and noble life that is free from suffering, free from dukkha or unhappiness. This email gives simple but very direct and much focused instruction for beginners to develop both the vipassana or insight and metta or loving kindness meditation. Then the sixth email was written to the Spencer Meditation Group from Charleston, West Virginia, United States, America. It was written as a commentary on the breath-centered and four-posture meditation as taught by the Buddha for a two-day workshop to be held on the 9 and 10 October 2006 in Charleston, West Virginia, USA. Then the last one is, seven enclosed email was based on a reply to one brother email circular dated 20th of September 2006, inviting me, relative, to deliver a Sunday Dhamma talk on the topic of meditation training, developing calm and insight at Kothat Kemuning Buddhist Center. This email spelled out the summarized format of the ongoing weekly 3 to 6 Saturday meditation at Champaka Buddhist Lodge, as conducted by Brother Teo. Then the acknowledgement is very important. It is the donor's intention that these enclosed notes be given free to all who are interested. And as such, we would like to take this opportunity to thank and rejoice in the wholesomeness of all those Dhamma friends who have donated and helped in the typing, typesetting, proofreading, etc., to make this free distribution of Dhamma Dana possible. With metta always, and may all beings be well and happy, and may they too be free from all suffering as soon as possible. Okay, then we have to turn to the next page. The first page is, I add in this what they call the words of wisdom of the Buddha extracted from the Dhammapada verse. These are the verses I always quote. That's why you don't have to copy it down. They are all here. But you have to understand them. They are very important. So what is been written in the Dhammapada, they don't explain much. They only got some maybe commentary, like a short story or what. But the full Dhamma description of its deep meaning are not there. If you understand the deep meaning of the Buddha under these few important Dhammapada verse, you will rejoice and you will have a lot of gratitude and respect for him. So I will read to you. Dhammapada verse on avoiding all evil, do good and purify the mind via having the right view with regards to the law of karma. So the Buddha spoke in the opening two verses of the Dhammapada. The first section is on all the twin verses. So this verse 1 and 2, they are the most important. That's why the Buddha put them the first two when it was compiled. The Buddha always said, under Dhammapada verse 1, is it, your mind is the forerunner of all things. Now you understand. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. Means through what? Consciousness. If one speak, act and think with a wicked mind or unwholesome mind, then suffering will follow one like the wheel that follow the hood. So what is an unwholesome mind? What is a wicked mind? The mind that has the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion, isn't it? That's why it's a very evil and wicked mind. That's why the unwholesome thought, because the evil roots are there. They are the roots of all evil. So the Buddha make it very clear. He said, your life, you decide how you want to live. If you choose to be heedless and neglect your life, then he said, don't blame anybody for your own suffering. He said, because your mind is the most important. That's why he said, mind is chief. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Means when you arise your thought, it becomes the forerunner of all things. Before the mental intention and the thought arise, nothing happened, understand or not? But the moment you arise or thought with the mental intention, then your action, your speech, and your thought process follow. That's why he said, your mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. So this is a very important statement. If you know your mind is so important, you must train your mind. Be heedful and do not make mistakes. Otherwise, if you are heedless, if you choose to neglect your mind, if you choose to be heedless, like you don't care, you don't want to find out, then you will act, speak, and think with a wicked mind, an unwholesome mind, is it? Yeah. Once you do that, suffering will follow you like the wheel that follows the hood. So he said, you cannot blame anybody for what happened. Yeah. So it's your choice. Yeah. Likewise, there is a complimentary verse, the Buddha said. Verse number 2. Again, the Buddha repeat, your mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. So if you have the wisdom and the understanding, if you know the importance of mind, you will diligently train your mind, develop the ability to be mindful, to be heedful. Then he said, if you do that, then you will speak, act, and think with a wholesome mind, a pure mind, and then happiness will follow you, like the shadow that never leaves you. So now, very clear, if you want to have happiness in life, you must train your mind to be ever mindful of the mental intention behind all your actions, speech, and thought, so that there is no unwholesome thought, there is no wicked thought, no evil roots. Then happiness will follow you. But if you choose to neglect yourself, be heedless, he said, then you go ahead and find out for yourself what will happen. If you do that, Dhammapada verse 1 will take its course and you will suffer. And because of these two verses, the source of its arising is actually from the Buddha's wisdom. Because the Buddha, after he became enlightened, he had this right view with regards to the law of karma. He realized this law is very powerful. The law of karma, the Buddha come to understand, you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. Then there is one more part, is it? Each and every one of us is a living being. As long as you are born, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. You cannot blame anybody. So when you realize the importance of karma, you must be very, very careful with your karma, isn't it? So how do you take care of your karma? You have to follow the advice of the Buddha, isn't it? Keep your precepts. When you keep your precepts, you avoid all evil, isn't it? Then do whatever goodness that you can. And to do that, you have to train your mind, isn't it? To be mindful, to be heedful, so that you can see the mental intention behind, so that your action, speech, and thought process are in accordance with Dhammapada verse 2, so that you can prevent the arising of suffering through avoidance of Dhammapada verse 1. So all this comes from this right view with regards to the law of karma. So that's why you have verse 183, the famous verse, advice of the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 183. The Buddha said, all evil has to be avoided. Cultivate whatever goodness possible and purify the mind. This is the advice of all the Buddhists. So in the Pali version, you always hear from the monk, they always speak, and even from the tapes, sabba papasa akaranam kusalesa upasampadan sacitta pariyottapanam etang buddhana sasana. This is the famous Dhammapada verse 183. Sabba is all, papasa is evil, akaranam. So the Buddha very specific. All evil you must avoid. Not only avoid evil, all sabba papasa, akaranam. Then when it comes to wholesomeness, goodness, he never say sabbe, he never say all. He said kusalesa upasampadan. Kusalesa means kusala karma. Goodness, wholesomeness, meritorious action, speech and thought process. Kusala. He said wherever there is condition to do good, you must try your best to do. He never say all. That's why he's very specific. Then sacitta pariyutapana. Citta is mind. You have to purify your mind so that there is clarity, so that there is understanding, so that wisdom can come to be. Then only you can free your mind. Otherwise, you still can have suffering. So these first three are important for life. Okay? In life, when you understand this, you know how to train your mind. You know how to keep your precept. You know the importance of all this. Why did you do all this? So that's why when you come here for puja, you know why you pay respect, develop all the spiritual faculty, the faith, the virya, the sati, the samadhi, and the panya. Then you understand that these are the mental states of faculty that you need to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma, to understand the Buddha's teaching. Then you renew your three refuges and your five precepts, so that it will bring forth the condition for you to avoid all evil, connect with the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha, the Triple Gem, that purify your mind to become enlightened. So it explains how you can actually understand life. So the first three Dhammapada verses are very important as far as life is concerned. Why you come to the temple, why you do the puja, why you renew your precept, why you take refuge, and why you pay homage and all those things. Then the next three is very important for meditator or cultivator. If you want to understand the meditation as taught by the Buddha, you must understand Dhammapada verse 21, 22, and 23. Because it defines very clearly to you what the meditative state or meditative mind are. Dhammapada verse on heedfulness or apamada vaga. This is the next session of the Dhammapada after the first. The first section is the twin verse. There are 10 pairs of them. So 10 times 2 is 20. That's why this Dhammapada section is the second one. It starts with verse 21. And the 21, 22, 23 are the most important. That's why they are put in front of the heedfulness, Dhammapada say. Verse 21, the Buddha always said this, is it? Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful do not die. The heedless are as if dead. This one I have stressed many times. I have explained many times. So now, you understand this important message of the Buddha. That's why you must train your mind to be heedful, ever mindful, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path or the meditation as taught by the Buddha. If you are heedless, the Buddha said, you are as if dead. Means spiritually, the Buddha cannot help you. Because if you choose to be heedless, means you choose to neglect your life. You don't want to train your mind. You don't want to develop the mindfulness, the heedfulness, to be aware of your mental intention behind all your actions, speech and thought process. And because you are heedless, Dhammapada verse 1 takes its course. Suffering will follow you, like the hood that follows the wheel. But whereas if you are heedful, the Buddha said, the heedful do not die. Understand or not? Means spiritually, you will never die. Then the heedful do not die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. Then heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Deathless means the enlightened state, the eternal life, means you don't have to die anymore. means it can go beyond birth and death. That's why in Mahayana they call liao sen si, means you go beyond birth and death. So this is a very important understanding. Dhammapada verse 21 on heedfulness. Then the Buddha, scared the monk do not understand, he re-emphasized. He come out with verse 22. He said, distinctly understanding the difference, the big difference between heedfulness and heedlessness, the wise one intend on heedfulness. And they will rejoice in the rhyme of the Aryas or the enlightened one. So if you intend through your wisdom to be heedful, then you will rejoice in the rhyme of the Aryas or the enlightened one. Means you will be with the enlightened one, destined to be enlightened. So this is very important. Then the verse 23 confirm 100%. He said, the constantly meditative, the ever mindful and the steadfast one realize the bond-free supreme enlightenment, Nibbana. So this is 100% confirmed. If you want to realize Nibbana, you must have this quality. What are these qualities? The constantly meditative means what? Constantly cultivating the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. Then ever mindful is what? Ever heedful, understand not? Ever mindful means your mind is always heedful, mindful. So ever mindful to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, and you hold on to this steadfastly, means unwaveringly, you will realize the bond-free supreme Nibbana. See? 100% you will realize enlightenment, Nibbana. So this are very important Dhammapada verse that will give you the understanding and faith as how to develop your meditation. That's why the first stage is to cultivate the training of the mind to be heedful. Without heedfulness, you cannot start. Without heedfulness, you cannot develop the meditation. To be heedful is to be ever mindful, to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Ever mindful is sati, mindfulness. That's like the first factor of enlightenment. Without sati, there is no heedfulness. Without sati, there is no Dhamma investigation. You remember? The second factor of enlightenment. Without sati, there is no four foundation of mindfulness. You cannot cultivate. Then without sati, you cannot realize enlightenment. That's why sati or mindfulness is so important. The spiritual faculty too need sati, the third spiritual faculty. So the factors of enlightenment also need sati. So without sati, actually, you are as if dead, because the heedless are as if dead. So sati is very important, mindfulness is very important. So that's why in meditation, you have to train your mind to be mindful, constantly aware, mindful within, relax and aware. So that is the most important. Then after that, the Buddha's advice, apamadena sampadeta. This is a famous saying. Before the Buddha died, before he passed into parinibbana, he always tell the monk, strive on with heedfulness. Apamadena sampadeta. Do not be heedless. And that's all. When you can follow this advice, the last message, you are already saved. Strive on with heedfulness means what? When you are heedful, you never die, is it? Understand? Dhammapada verse 21 already say, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. That's why you have to strive on with heedfulness. Do not be heedless. Otherwise, you get yourself into trouble. Dhammapada verse 1 take this course. Then when you are heedless, you suffer a lot. You entangle yourself in life. You don't understand the truth. You don't understand the importance of the law of karma. The importance of training your mind to be heedful, to avoid all evil, to do good, and to purify the mind. All this you fail to understand. Okay, that's what the word of wisdom, by the Buddha is all about. You have to reflect on it, understand it's important, then you will know how to cultivate and move. The Buddha very simple, your life, you decide how you want to live. If you choose to have suffering, then no need to train your mind, no need to be heedful, do what you like, get into trouble. But if you want to avoid Dhammapada, worst one, you want to avoid suffering, you better train your mind, be heedful. Okay? Next page, page 1. The hands worldly. This one you have to listen. This is a very important topic. My email to them, I say, greetings to all Dhamma friends, Kayanamitas. I am Theo from Malaysia, because this was written to a United States of America Buddhist Society, one of the Buddhist Society website. So I have to introduce myself. Greetings to all Dhamma friends, Kayanamitas. I am Theo from Malaysia and am new to your group, but have been following some of your discussions recently and wish to participate in a small way by sharing my little understanding. I put inverted comma so that I don't lie. Otherwise they say I lie. My little understanding of the Buddha Dharma. Little because it's just a handful of leaf. How much is that? Just a handful. Understand? Yes, I fully agree that one should be heedful and focus only on the cultivation of practice of the Four Noble Truths as advised by the Buddha via his analogy of the handful of leaves at Kosambi in the Simsapa group, which I quote. This one is from that book, Buddha's Ancient Path. You go to that book, you will find this. It's from there. I extracted from there because, but the words may be slightly different. I more or less recall the sutta quote. Is it once the Buddha was living in Kosambi in the Simsapa group, then gathering a handful of leaves in his hand, the Buddha addressed the bhikkhu. What do you think, monk? Which is greater in quantity, the handful of Simsapa leaf gathered by me, or what is in the forest? Then the bhikkhu or the monks replied, not many, venerable sir, are the leaves in the handful gathered by the blessed one. Many are the leaves in the forest. Then the Buddha replied, you listen. Even so, monks, many other things I have fully realized, but not declared out to you. Few other things I have declared out to you. And why, monk, have I not declared them? They, monk, are indeed not useful, not conducive, are not essential for the holy life of purity. They do not lead to disgust, to dispassion, to detachment, to tranquility, to full understanding, to cessation, to enlightenment, and to nibbana. That is why, monk, they are not declared by me. And what is it, monk, that I have declared? Means the handful of leaves. So this is the first turning of the Four Noble Truths. You listen. The Buddha said, this is the noble truth of suffering. This had I declared. This is the noble truth of cause of arising of suffering. This have I declared. This is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. This have I declared. This is the noble truth of the path that lead to the cessation of suffering or dukkha. This have I declared. And why, monk, have I declared this truth? Means the Four Noble Truths. They are indeed useful, conducive, and are essential to the holy life of purity. They lead to disgust, to dispassion, to detachment, to tranquility, to full understanding, to cessation, to enlightenment, and to nibbana. That is why, monk, they are declared by me. Thus spoke the Buddha. So you see the importance of the handful of leaves. This advice are given by the Buddha. Sorry, this advice as given by the Buddha is so beautiful. So why not we just focus on the handful of leaves, the Four Noble Truths, noble truths that can make you noble or enlightened ones. Then truth will dawn upon us like what the Buddha said under the salutation to the Dhamma. That is, Dhamma is to be realized by the wise, each for themselves. This advice will enhance or enable us to avoid discussing irrelevant topics or issues that more often than not only lead to more doubt. And at times, if we are not mindful enough, it may also cause unnecessary misunderstanding and argument, etc., leading to wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. Eh? Because when you try to argue, you have this problem, right and wrong. Hence, violating all the noble eightfold path factor. So why not we just stay focused on the noble truth that can help us in our practice and cultivation and meditation as advised by the Buddha. So this is the important part. How you have to be very, very clear about your intention and very focused about your cultivation. Don't go and engage yourself with unnecessary discussion that is not conducive for enlightenment. Like wanting to be right. Say, this is the right teaching, that is the wrong teaching. So you are arguing more than cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path or the Four Noble Truths. You like to ask certain type of very irrelevant question. What actually happened to the Buddha after he died? Will that help you? One will say Parinibbana, but you don't even know what Parinibbana is. The other will say, no, Buddha, finish me, finish, no more. And then you argue. It's not conducive, understand? Then whether Buddha was a true prince or he was what, the history like you all used to ask me, it's not important, is it? We have nothing to do with the Four Noble Truths. Why do you want to ask this type of question? That's why the Buddha say, forget about it. That's why I always say, according to the scripture, the Buddha was born like that, like that. So no need to argue, understand? According to the scripture, finish. But more important is the Four Noble Truths. Then we develop the understanding. We develop the wisdom through understanding the Four Noble Truths in its three turning and 12 modes. Okay, turn to the next page. Email number 2. What is meditation? This one you will learn a lot. You listen carefully. Here you have to excuse me because the question was actually what I received. This is the question that they wrote down there. Then I reply to them. I didn't mention the word Mahasi meditation. It is the question from that particular person who wants to know. So there is this person, he said, having done Mahasi meditation for a long time, I am trying to get my mind around the Anapanasati taught here, means taught by that US Buddhist group, because I happen to participate. He was asking a general question to the whole group. He said, I read the book, but I'm still not quite sure because this particular monk from that website, he wrote one book. I think something is on Anapanasati. I think it's something like Samatha Vipassana Award on the Anapanasati book. Then he quote, he said, I read the book, but I'm still not quite sure as to where the attention is to be placed. This is always the question, where to note, how to note. He said, I am comfortable with noticing sensation in the belly area like Mahasi Sayadaw's instruction. Like Mahasi Sayadaw instruct. However, perhaps that is too specific, and a more general noticing of the breath and just letting the mind down, calm down, sorry, and just letting the mind down, then calm down to it might be the instruction. That is the way he phrases his question. The English is a little bit difficult. Can anybody comment on what seems to work for them? Based on this question, I reply. Then you go and find out for yourself whether it is useful to you or not. I replied to him. I said, you have asked a very good question. And maybe I can start the ball rolling by sharing my own little experience. I put inverted comma again, regarding this matter. Guess the best person to answer your question directly is Bhante himself, because the monk who is in charge, he has not come back. I think he went somewhere for a retreat or what. But I will just approach it from a slightly different manner by focusing more on the handful of leaves rather than to answer your question directly. And I hope you don't mind. To me, after several years of serious meditative investigation, I have come to realize one very important truth or understanding with regards to meditation. That is, we need to understand what is meditation. See, this is always missing. Instead of clinging to method techniques or methods and teachers, because method never defines the meditation. Maybe it can act as an initial aid, like a float, to assist you initially to learn how to swim. To really know how to swim, you must let go of the float and believe that your body can float and reach a natural state of balance or buoyancy if you don't try to do anything. See, the key is don't try to do anything. That is, let go completely and you will float. Then the swimming becomes very natural and easy. Our mind is more or less the same. Its natural state is already the meditative state, or in the state of balance, equanimity, or stillness. So just be silent mentally and don't try to do anything. Don't even try to use the mind to meditate, to disrupt that natural state, because the thinking mind cannot meditate. But because of ignorance or avijja, the normal human mind has this wrong view to constantly arise the thinking or mental activity, sankhara, leading to the arising of mental consciousness, vijnanam, that supports the arising of the five aggregates of form and mind, namarupa. This is the dependent origination process. Hence, triggering of the whole chain of dependent origination, leading on to dukkha, finally. Likewise, when you really know what is meditation, then you will naturally know how to meditate at any place, any time, and under any circumstances. And you will not be constrained and deluded by your attachment to method, technique, and teacher. Basing on the analogy of the handful of leaves by the Buddha, it is pretty obvious that the Noble Eightfold Path itself is the meditation. Because according to the Buddha, he proclaimed under the Fourth Noble Truth, the path that leads to the cessation of all suffering or Nibbana is the Noble Eightfold Path. That is, any cultivation or practice, that can bring about the fulfillment of all these Noble Eightfold Path practices, like right view or samadhi, right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, or right living, right mindfulness, right effort, and right samadhi. The firm and unwavering mind, samadhi is the firm and unwavering mind, born of wisdom, equanimity, with clear awareness within. Always remember, there must be awareness or sati. It's the real meditation. Then meditation becomes very simple and very straightforward, and what the Buddha said about apamada or heedfulness become very meaningful. So you must always remember, whatever you do in the name of meditation, always remember, if the method and technique doesn't bring about the fulfillment of the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, it is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Understand not? That is the most important. After you meditate, you got very special power, very calm, very wise. You can fly, you can do everything, but no Noble Eightfold Path. That is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Understand not? The meditation as taught by the Buddha is the Noble Eightfold Path. You are very noble in everything you do. You have right view, noble action, noble speech, noble thought. No wrong thought, no wrong speech, no wrong action. You are very noble in the way you communicate with people, in the way you act, in the way you arise your thought. And you are very noble in the way you live your life. That's why you have right livelihood, right living. And you are very noble in the way you conduct yourself. You have very good mindfulness, very good samadhi. Your mind has clarity. Then you constantly arise the right effort to purify your thought, your mind. So this is how the Noble Eightfold Path can bring about great transformation to the human being, to the living being, to your character, your personality, and make you really noble. That's why you become enlightened. So the noble one are enlightened one because they are very noble in their understanding of life, right view. They have right view. They're very noble in their action, speech, and thought process. That's why there is right speech, right action, and right thought. They are very noble in the way they live their life. And they are very noble in the way they conduct themselves because they have mindfulness. They are very sensitive. They have wisdom born of training the mind. So all this define clearly what the Buddha's meditation is. The meditation as taught by the Buddha that can lead to the cessation of all suffering is the Noble Eightfold Path. So, in the name of meditation, whatever you do, what method, what technique, the Buddha say, check. If it does not bring you back to the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, then it is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Always remember, that is the most important check. Without Noble Eightfold Path, there is no real enlightenment. Only a person with Noble Eightfold Path can be considered enlightened and very noble. Otherwise, you are very crude. You think you are enlightened, yes, fair enough. But you don't have right speech, right action, right thought, right view. You simply do a lot of other things. That type of enlightenment is different from what the Buddha is seeking. Understand not? You can have a lot of power, ability, very famous, can do all sorts of very maybe powerful psychic ability. But to the Buddha, you cannot live life. You cannot develop all the understanding of life to be in harmony with everything that you come to contact in life. So this is the important part. Now I go on. Paragraph 2, page 3. That is starting from heedfulness, which is to be ever mindful of the cultivation, we start to develop the first path factor of right view with regards to the law of karma, the Four Noble Truths, the second right view, and the law of dependent origination or the law of cause and effect, which is the third right view. We are the first and second turning of the Four Noble Truths to develop the Suttamaya Panya and Chintamaya Panya. The first two types of corresponding wisdom that come with the first and second turning is Suttamaya Panya. So I have to explain a little bit here. Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. So in the early day, when the Buddha proclaimed the Buddha Dharma or the Four Noble Truths, that is the first turning. He just proclaimed the truth, okay? Then through hearing, you can understand what he said and become awakened or enlightened or develop the wisdom. That type of wisdom born of hearing the sutta, the Buddha calls Suttamaya Panya. Understand not? That's why this is the first turning wisdom. Then after that, the second turning, the Buddha elaborate on the Four Noble Truths. He not only proclaimed, he said, This noble truth of suffering, the first noble truth we say, is to be understood. Why did he say that? Under the second turning. He said this noble truth of suffering is to be understood. So if you reflect and contemplate and inquire into what the Buddha said, why did he say that? And then you develop another level of wisdom. This one is called contemplative wisdom. Understand? No? Wisdom that arises after you have reflected and contemplated into what the Buddha said and inquire through a trained mind, through a very calm and quiet mind, or what they call a very creative mind, a mind that is silent in a very quiet, tranquil setting. So, second turning is reflection and contemplation and inquiry into what the Buddha has proclaimed. And then from the second turning, a type of wisdom will arise. They call it Chintamaya Panya. You don't have to write too much note, because in the subsequent email, the three turning is explained. I will continue. Once we have these three important right views cultivated, you know what are the three important right views? The law of karma, the four noble truths, and the law of dependent origination. These are the three important right views. They correspond with the three types of spiritual law. You remember? There are five universal order. The first two are scientific. Uttu niyama and bija niyama. The physical order and the biological order. Then you have law of karma. Karma niyama. The first one, right view, is law of karma. Then you have Chitta Niyama, law of the mind. The Four Noble Truths is one of the law of the mind. The dependent origination is one of the law of the mind. Then the last one is Dhamma. Means you have Karma Niyama, Chitta Niyama, then Dhamma Niyama. Means universal order of Dhamma. All of the Buddha's teaching. So these three right view covers all the Dhammas, understand? So that's why when you have these three right views cultivated, then developing the rest of the path factor will become very natural and straightforward. The right view with regards to the law of karma will enable us to become very wary of our karma. That is, we will strive on to take care of our karma at all times. To do this, you will have to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind, which is the advice of all Buddhas. To avoid all evil and do good, we will have to constantly cultivate the right thought, like metta, compassion, and all the other 37 requisite of factors of enlightenment. All the virtues, like generosity, contentment, patience, gratitude, humility, etc., which are free of all the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Hence, we will see this rather important path factor of right thought or right view, leading to the right thought. So, the first path factor of right view will condition your right thought, because this is very important. Because you have to avoid all evil, means no wrong thought. Okay? Hence, we will see this rather important path factor of right view leading to right thought. And since our thoughts have mental intention born of our views, hence wrong view will condition wrong thought. That is, if your view are wrong, your thought will be wrong. And since thoughts, mental intention, condition, speech, action, and the way we live our life, all the subsequent noble eightfold path factor will be wrong too. Now we see the importance of right view or right understanding, and why the Buddha put it as the first path factor within the noble eightfold path. So this right view is to counter the wrong view born of ignorance or avijja, which is ignorance. So now you see how important this right view is, because it is Sorry, because it will enable you to weaken the first link of avijja paccaya sankhara. The law of dependent origination, you must understand. The first two links, dependent on ignorant activity of mind, sankhara comes to be. You know what is ignorant or not? Not knowing the truth. So what is not knowing the truth? When you don't know the truth, what do you do? One thing to know, isn't it? One thing to understand, what do? You go and think. That's why avijja paccaya sankhara. Understand? Because you don't understand. You got ignorant. You don't know the truth. That's why you arise the thought. Understand? That's why avijja paccaya sankhara. Then sankhara paccaya vijnana. That's how all this come to be. So this part is very important. Once avijja is weakened, then your sankhara or mental activity, volition, formation, tendency, and mental state, etc., will become less and less. That is, your usual mundane thinking, born of ignorance, will start to slow down. Then only your sati or mindfulness can shine forth to develop the necessary, more refined type of heedfulness or apamada, required for further cultivation and practice. Heedfulness at this level, that is when your daily mindfulness or sati is already quite stable, will enable you to arise the appropriate sati needed for true Dhamma investigation, to develop the insight knowledges or wisdom that will strengthen or refine your right view. After that, the sati, when supported by the more refined right view, will arise a samasati perfecta. This samasati or right mindfulness, together with the four right effort, will bring about the perfection of right thought, right speech, and right action, etc. That is how it has helped me, and I hope it is of use to you all. From my understanding, this path of practice requires a lot of patience, diligence, and faith in the Triple Gem. Guess I have taken up too much of your time, and thank you for reading. And may the blessing of the Triple Gem be with all beings always, with metta always, by me, gratitude. So this is what I have written to them. So you have to go back and slowly understand, because at that time when I wrote, it was what I have in my heart, the Dhamma. I didn't have time to explain because it was a sharing on a website. So it was not a direct interaction like what we are doing here. Here you can ask me questions and you can maybe seek clarification and all those things. So if you got any question, you can ask. No problem. What is meditation to? Maybe I finish this then. You ask. If we don't have time, maybe next. Oh, 6 o'clock, cannot. Okay, we continue next lesson. We have to stop. 6 o'clock already. Okay, you go back and read. Then you got any question, you can ask. So that next Sunday, you can have a more meaningful discussion. As usual, we will meditate maybe for half an hour or what, or 20 minutes. Then you have more time. On the Q&A. Okay, we have to end. We will do the usual sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then after that, maybe you can make your aspiration. Okay, sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata chabumata devanaga mahindika Punyang tang anamoditwa chirang rakhan tu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits, and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anamodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share this merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. transfer merits to departed ones. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Let this marriage accrue to all departed relatives, and may they all do be well and happy. Okay, we will invoke the blessing for our country. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati hetu cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season, and may there be a rich and good harvest for all, and may the world prosper and become more peaceful. And may the government and ruler of the day be righteous. Okay, the last one is your aspiration. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawat nivana patia. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect to all the worthy ones.